Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research, episode 111. That's 111. I have with me here, as usual, my co-host, protector of endless sleeps, Hunter Ginn.
Good evening, Jeff.
Yeah, I have summoning on the brain. My apologies, but we'll call you protector of the endless sleeps, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I'll be protecting some sleep, you know, once we get done here.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, that does kind of fit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right.
No, I protect my sleep.
Protector of the endless sleeps or biscuit, whatever you prefer. We're happy to have you here. We're really happy with the response we've been getting to the last few episodes. I mean, we've always had a really generous response from people who like us, but we've had a lot of good comments on the last several episodes. The Napalm Death mid-90s era episode, the Weird Sigh episode, extremely well-received stuff. And we thank you for letting us know what you like. And to our surprise, part two of the Intrigue compilation series was also really warmly welcomed. A lot of great comments on our Facebook page particularly. So this proves we have the best listeners ever. We're going to continue to bring you left-of-center content that fits the Radical Research spirit and impulse. You can feel free to write us at radicalresearchpodcast@gmail.com. That's also our PayPal ID. We have a much easier way to access the PayPal thing if you want to donate to our cause. It's in the show notes, but it's paypal.me/rrpodcast. Just an easy way to get there. I haven't said this probably since the first 10 or 15 episodes, because Hunter and I aren't really all that big or that savvy with marketing and pushing ourselves. We just do what we do and hope people follow and find us. But you can help other people find us by rating and reviewing us on whatever platform you listen to. That stuff actually really helps a lot. And I forget about that sometimes. So there you go. Now.
So do I. We're not good at it.
As I said. Our brains are full of this kind of mush, things like Immortals, Blizzard Beasts. This is their divisive 29-minute album from 1997. And Hunter, you were the one with the bright idea to cover this. And I'd like you to explain perhaps why you feel it fits into the sort of Radical Research oeuvre more than maybe the other album by Immortals.
Well, because it is really just one of the most batshit metal albums ever written and recorded, in my opinion. So much of it makes no sense. It's like taking extreme metal and black metal so far to the threshold that it almost just breaks apart. And the other thing is, it is a divisive record. And we have a history of covering divisive records, like within you know, otherwise accepted catalogs. Obviously, My Dying Bride's 34% comes to mind.
Yes.
And I guess the other thing was, it was sort of an exercise for me, because I always tried to piece together why so many people love Battles in the North and so few people seem to like or get Blizzard Beasts.
Yeah. And I think, as we'll hear, they're not that far away from each other. It's just simply that Blizzard Beasts takes what Battles in the North did and just pushes it way over the cliff. I mean, they're not that dissimilar. I feel like if you like one, you must love the other, right?
That's the, you know, the quandary. But there's also, I mean, it's not just the music taking that much further. I mean, it's the production. It's just even the cover art, everything is just maxed out.
Let's give voice to that with a little snippet from the first track of this 8-song album. There's an intro that we heard at the beginning of the show that serves as an intro on some copies of the record. It's not actually labeled, but it is a separate piece. Then we get 8 songs proper, and they blaze by real quick. Like I said, it's a 29-minute album, something like that. And here's the title track, just a bit of it.
Yeah.
What's not to love?
I mean, if you like metal, it's everything great about metal: riffs, drum pounding, lyrics, shredding, vocals. But it has the density of coal. It's like it took all those things, and they just—it's a small sounding record.
Yeah,
it's like all the intensity is like compacted and condensed, and until it's just—I don't know. Sometimes, and I'm finding this already tonight, is I'm having trouble articulating what it is that I think makes this record so special.
Well, that's one of the things. Yeah, that's one of the things that always attracted me to it when I finally got into Immortal. And that's a whole other story that may be interesting or not. However, when I finally got into them and started to really listen for real, this one was one of those untouchable beauties where you're like, I don't really know why I love it so much. Or it's like you said, it's hard to articulate. Whereas I think describing Battles in the North or describing At the Heart of Winter or any of them, any of the other ones from the first six, we'll say, kind of easy to figure out why you like them. This one has a mystery about it. I think part of it is certainly the production. And I don't think we covered this one on our Flawed Productions episode way back when, but we could have.
We very, very easily could have. If we put Leaf Scars on there, we could have put Blizzard Beast.
It was recorded at Sigma, S-I-G-M-A, Sigma Recording Studio in Bergen. And I don't recognize that name from a lot of records. I could be overlooking something here, but yeah, I don't know that studio very well. And I just wonder if it was one of those things where technically maybe it wasn't up to snuff, but man, it sure lends kind of a bit of a magic dust type layer to this beguiling album, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know. I think, you know, we're as listeners now conditioned to, you know, hearing really, really fast technical death metal and some black metal, but it's also hard for me to describe how fast that song we just listened to is. I felt my hands tensing up as I listened to it, with the fear of having to play something like that.
I was gonna say the drummer hands were tensing. You were already getting like bloody blisters, and you hadn't even touched a drumstick today.
And Horde was probably, you know, yawning. He'd probably just gotten up when he tracked this.
That's, you're having like the drummer stigmata, like listening to somebody else, and your hands do what they do after an Agalloch show. I mean, because I've seen the hands in person, and it's shocking. But just listening to Blizzard Beast will give you drummer hands if you're a drummer.
Yes,
stigmata hands. And you know, it's worth noting that this is their first album to feature drummer Horg or Horf or however you say it. One point we need to make is that a lot of people, there are conspiracies out there, and I don't even know if they've been solved yet. I mean, quite honestly, I can't say that I'm like 110% Immortal expert, but there's a lot of conspiracies that Pure Holocaust wasn't a real drummer or Battles in the North wasn't. And I've certainly heard that about Blizzard Beast as well. What's your take as a drummer and certainly trying to listen to it through the Flawed production, through the Blizzard, the very appropriately Blizzard-like sound that we're getting?
I absolutely think these are real drums.
Yeah, me too.
I think that Abbott's playing on Battles is real. There's just too many flaws and too much uncontrollable energy to. It would take more time to program it to sound like that.
Well, that's just it with all the irregularities that I hear in the drumming department on, especially on this album. And that doesn't mean even flaws or mistakes, something that shouldn't be there. It's just an irregularity. It's like almost an approach thing. And when you're playing so fast, sometimes you do just kind of have to give in, like close your eyes and hope you get to the end, you know?
yeah.
And this is one of those. So this, we're going to listen to more.
This is high wire shit, man.
This is totally high wire shit. Released on Osmos Productions. This is the fourth of six Immortal albums to appear on that legendary label. And also worth noting, because they were like one of the very cornerstones of Osmos, which is an era that I think we look on incredibly fondly, and a label we could look on incredibly fondly.
I still get goosebumps seeing that logo.
This is a little bit of Nebular Raven's Winter.
to know for what I blow. Labrador, Raven, Winters. Drink come from a supplow. Rapes is not begun. Chronic ages and a no.
One of the other curious things for me about this record is, despite its gnarliness, you start to get some of the epic elements that would characterize At the Heart of Winter.
This is the inflection point between Blizzard Beasts and At the Heart. Like, that's where they turned forever. They never really got back to these first four albums and the fire and intensity of those. They streamlined a little bit. They got, as you say, more epic, more later Bathory rather than the earliest Bathory. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think what we hear in Nebula Raven's Winter, there's that, I think what's a bass part, just kind of striking a chord or a note and letting it ring out underneath all that chaos. And it gives just an extra dimension, and it's kind of unexpected too.
Very unexpected.
Yeah, so that's a Bath or Abath, however you want to say it. That's him doing something rather creative in this sphere. Also, of course, then we have Demonaz on guitar and vocals, which this would be his final Immortal album, at least as a guitar player, until 2018.
Hear why?
Well, you can kind of hear why. Right?
I mean, literally, this album, from what I understand, injured him. He had tinnitus, and couldn't play for many years.
Yeah, tendonitis is a bitch when you're like a fast fucking Norwegian Blizzard black metal band, I guess.
Yeah, very inconvenient.
Listening to that back, and I've heard this before in this album, but you can certainly hear early Creator as an influence. It just has this rugged, kind of jerky guitar riffing approach. So I hear that. I can't figure out what's like more malevolent, the guitar tone or the vocals. It's frightening shit, and it's malevolent. I mean, that's the best word for me for both the vocals and the guitar tone.
Yes. A hell broth of elements.
I like it. Getting all stirred up over there down in Savannah here. Yeah. And then, man, let's just one more time give praise to that jittery, fucking just plain weird drum sound. I mean, it's one of those that's just technically messed up and not right. But you wouldn't want Blizzard Beasts any other way, right?
No. I mean, to me, that only, like, the all that shit just amplifies the intensity of what's already extremely intense material. There's like a desperate element to it,
and a drugged one. I feel like when we get later to Noctambulant, which is my second favorite song on the album. Noctambulant follows Mountains of Might, which is the big epic, and I think almost everybody's favorite on this album. Noctambulant always seemed to me to be like them dosing on something or having taken some sort of pill and just being completely and utterly whacked out, bordering death. It just has this like really frightening, almost psychotic break sort of approach. This is one of those albums, man. This puts us in a place, and of course a very frosty place and an icy place as well. This is about a little less than 2 minutes of a song that's not much longer, called Suns That Sank Below.
Now, I just thought, like, we're actually, if you listen to this episode, you're going to hear most of this album.
Yeah, pretty much.
We'll be right back.
mean, I was thinking about psychedelic music today, you know, what that means to me. I was listening to Robert Wyatt's Rock Bottom.
Okay.
And it was just, I don't know, it was kind of drizzling rain, and it took me somewhere else. But I was just thinking, you know, psychedelic music is not, you know, a kind of music. Psychedelic music could be like Cocteau Twins, Head Over Heels. It could be Miles Davis, Bitches Brew. And it could be Immortals, Blizzard Beasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally mind-altering, sometimes body-altering effect. It made it seem even more special to me when I thought of it in those terms.
That could be a book. That could be an episode, certainly, of what is psychedelic music, and you run the span, because there is quite the span, as you say. You know, it's not just, it starts with Gong, it starts with Hawkwind, but it ends up here at Blizzard Beasts. I would completely agree with you. Tends to be my favorite sort of black metal. I mean, I like different threads, but the stuff that feels psychedelic seems like the best.
Yeah, and black metal's got a really high capacity for creating that kind of mood or that kind of experience, because it's just fundamentally strange music. I mean, just the you know, the registers, the production techniques. I mean, it kind of lends itself to, you know, to something hallucinatory.
I remember having that sort of struggle when I first heard Slayer, like really early on, getting into extreme stuff. I don't think I hadn't heard Bathory of Voivod yet, or even Possessed. I think Slayer was the first. Like, this is, you know, of course, Metallica, yes. But Slayer was that. And I think Venom, but to me, Slayer had a greater impact. And I struggled more with Slayer at first. And I'm talking like the first couple months. Listening to Show No Mercy and the atonality of it, especially the guitar solos, like I couldn't, everything I'd learned about music in school, or as I was playing acoustic guitar as a kid at that point, actually even electric by the time that came out, yeah, even bass, but just everything I'd known about traditional approaches to music, or whether it's reading music or listening to music or whatever it is, like I had to come to terms with some things. And then once I got into that, or over that, and certainly understood the bluster of it all, then bam, then you're ready. And that's, you know, that describes the obsession since 83 or 84. So what's your favorite Immortal album? Do you have one? Is this it?
That's a really, really tough question.
Yeah.
Because there are three albums in their catalog that are just completely indispensable for me.
I wonder if it's my three. Let's go. That would be weird, but then again, not weird.
One is Pure Holocaust, which I think is just one of the really, really, truly great orthodox black metal records.
Okay.
Second would be Blizzard Beast for obvious reasons. And then third would be At the Heart of Winter, because I just think it's a compositional masterpiece.
That it is. I don't know what my three would be. I know that two of mine are certainly Blizzard Beasts and At the Heart of Winter. I don't know what that third would be. It's kind of weird. I got a little turned off to Immortal early on, because this is when black metal was really brand new, at least this strain, this Norwegian strain, the late, you know, bands that came out of the death metal scene in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, switched to black metal, the infamous story. Some of the stuff I heard early on, I was a little hard on. First Satyricon, First Ancient, First Immortal was among those. And I was just this, like, always to this day, and then, and even before then, for years. Ooh, there's some thunder, dude. That's perfect. Did you hear that?
No, but that
did you
is
hear
all.
That? It's thundering.
No,
like, yeah, we expected thunderstorms last night. We're getting them tonight, and that's perfect for an Immortal show. May the rain turn to snow. Yes. Okay. So, anyway,
yeah, but I hope it does.
Always this Bathory diehard, and I felt like these bands, I was seeing the Bathory influence too clearly, I guess, at first. I still think that about Svartalfheim by Ancient, but of course, you know, Dark Medieval Times, you know, I don't hear it as much. I don't hear it as much on the First Immortal. And I've come now to love that First Immortal quite a bit. And
it to death, but I totally hear all the Bathory in that thing.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I think it might be my third, because now it means something different to me. But anyway, let's listen to Battlefields. Before you see us, with a part of your life, the wind will lead us. Maybe this is the common feeling about Blizzard Beasts. I don't know, but it's easily their most misanthropic, almost extreme death metal. I fucking hate you. I fucking hate all of this, you know, and just absolute. I mean, look at the cover. Abathur, that's one of my favorite metal poses and looks of all time. I think that's just a very powerful image, and I love sort of the manipulation of the photo. It doesn't have the Immortal logo, as far as I can tell.
No, it's just the image.
There's just something so hateful about this, Morbid Angel-ish about this, that
I was going to say, you know, they went out on tour with Morbid Angel after Blizzard, after Battles. And when you said extreme death metal, I was thinking, oh, because I remember the interview that Chris Dick did with Abbath and Requiem 6, I believe. And he was just going on and on and on about watching Morbid Angel every night. And I would be willing to bet that some of that seeped into this.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the speed freak stuff, the complication. And like I said, the hatefulness, the misanthropy of it all. It's a glorious thing.
It is.
So on an album that is like, I don't know, what's the average song like? Three? Right about three and not much more?
Yeah. Well, and I'll say this, Jeff. We knew that we would do the whole album because it's just so short. And Jeff said, what do you want to do? And I said, why don't we just play the first 2 minutes of every song and then like little two of Mountains, because Mountains is like, it really in some ways, and you said this earlier, and it's dead on the money. I mean, the Mountains is really kind of the segue to what they would the springboard to what they would become.
It could have been on At the Heart of Winter, obviously a different production approach. Because didn't they record that with Peter Tegren?
They did. Well, they did the final three at Abyss.
At Abyss, yeah. Well, yeah, Mountains of Mind.
And Horse got involved with Peter Tegren too.
That's right. He played in Hypocrisy after a while and some other bands too. Anyway, let's focus. Blizzard Beasts. It's all that matters. 6.5 minutes.
It's not about late 90s, early 2000s Peter Tegren.
So. Ooh, when's the Catch 22 show coming? That's such a bad album.
Right after the Pain show.
I like Peter. I like early Hypocrisy. I love Abducted is an amazing album.
Abducted's my favorite.
A heavy metal classic.
Abducted's incredible.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Immortal. Mountains of Might, 6.5 minutes. As we mentioned, it's that expanded, more epic Immortal. Beautiful little middle in this snippet, which finds us in the middle of the song. Yeah, nothing to do but let the music do the talking here.
Mountains of Light.
That's like the most majestic stuff from Blood, Fire, Death by Bathory.
Wow.
What else can we say?
Nothing, but that's just, I know what that phrase means coming from you. Really, that the clean part that you mentioned, it sounds like at Heart of the Winter, the second song is called Solar Fall.
Solar Fall.
I remember hearing it the first time, and it just moved me greatly. And that, you know, that's something that they would continue, something that Aboth would incorporate on the Eye record, which I really love, Between Two Worlds.
Wow. Okay. That's a whole can of worms. First of all, I think you're talking about that great part, that great middle part in Mountains of Might. We'll get to the later Immortal in a sec, but the middle part of Mountains of Might there that you mentioned that has the resemblance to Solar Fall, man, you can't say enough great shit about that. Let's move to Noctambulant, unless there's something about Mountains of Might you want to say, because that song is just a stone cold classic of metal. Period.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think that it has taken on that kind of significance in the metal underground culture lore. I think that it has become acknowledged as just a really truly classic metal song.
Yeah, it's their Chapel of Ghouls.
Damn, son. Yeah. All right.
Speaking of damn, son, Noctambulant. This is this is an incredible song. But I got obsessed with this when I really, and I didn't click with Blizzard Beast right away. Like after I got into the Heart of Winter, that's what made me a true Immortal fan, I think. You know, after that disappointment of the first album I mentioned. And I just kind of like was around them and I remember listening to Battles for sure a lot. I made time for it. And then At the Heart of Winter comes out, and that made me go back. And for a while, I loved the first three, didn't get into Blizzard. So this was a slow burn for me. I don't even know if you knew that, but like, or if it even matters to anybody, but like that's the evolution for me. And it was an interesting way to come at it. Because I think I was also ready for it. Cause I've just gotten weirdly, the older I get, I don't get more conservative. I get more into war metal. So it's like,
I was about to say, dude, you've gotten into even heavier and heavier stuff since I've known you. No, it was like first the Split Ends revelation in 2010, which led you into all sorts of rock and pop stuff that you either had known but didn't, you know, cotton to, or all these new discoveries. And then it was the war metal thing. And
yeah. Although being, you know, early on into Bathory, early Voivod, even Nuclear Death, like it, you know, I was primed. I just didn't go down that rabbit hole. Now I'm buying Neanderthals albums. I mean, it's just like, it's fucking crazy. Pharmacist. Let me plug Pharmacist. That's the only and best Carcass clone band, man. They shit on General Surgery. I hate to say it, but they do. Big words. I know.
I don't know Pharmacist, but I do know and love me some Necrology.
For sure. Okay, so Noctambulant. Yeah, can't say enough about this.
We'll be right back.
That one sort of reverses the subtleties of Mountains of Might.
It kicks a fair bit of ass.
It does. It does. Now, they were just toying with our emotions earlier. And we're back into the maelstrom of Blizzard Beasts.
Lordy.
I love it. I mean, God, it's just some of the most out of control metal.
It's ever. Also, but you know, the thing about Immortal, and I guess this goes with great black metal in general, is like it's imaginative.
Oh, yeah, it always is.
It's not like just black metal tropes. There's something that's creative as hell.
Thing is like a Both can just write a song too. Like the guy is just a really good songwriter. Even when he's doing it at, you know, breakneck velocity, I think it's very difficult for him to hide his skill as a songwriter.
It's a great point, man. So here's something a little interesting. We're talking about creativity and imagination. It always struck me that of all the great song titles and lyrics on this album, they're pretty standard Immortal. And by that, I mean really good. I like the early Immortal lyrics a lot. They started to become tiresome after some of the later material, which we haven't talked about yet, but maybe we should after Winter of Ages. But Winter of Ages itself, the next song we're going to listen to, the penultimate song on Blizzard Beasts, always struck me as a too generic title for their stuff. Like Winter of the Ages, you start to see a crack there. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, it's hard to sustain an entire record at the pitch talking about nebular ravens.
yeah.
I don't ever want to come up on a nebular raven.
Well, that's no fuck shit no fuck.
Shit, I tell you, rather find myself betwixt a mama bear and a cub than come up on a damn nebular raven.
And the ditches in old southern West Georgia. So Nebula Raven's Winter and Winter of the Ages, they're the two winter titled tracks on the album. And Nebula Raven's Winter, as we said, crushes Winter of the Ages as a song title. Nevertheless, the music and the quality of the metal here just does not cease. It's incredible.
I don't know, man. I think that might have just become my second favorite song on this album.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. There's some beautiful shit in there. And it's like, it's all the beauty and all the violence and hellishness all sort of mingled together. That was really, really, it's a really special piece of music.
It's nuts. We've been listening. We always listen together, the snippets anyway. And it's wonderful because it's listening to great music with great friends is the best thing in the world. But as we listen to these, it's like we've been saying, I brought up twice now and I haven't said it, you know, on air, and I will now. is so much of their stuff, a lot of their stuff anyway, reminds me of Hellwitch. And you and I, of course, love Syzygial Miscreancy. Hope I've stumbled over that correctly.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. More derivial dissemination. I can roll off Hellwitch song. I can roll off Hellwitch song titles from that album the way Ken Golden can roll off like Italian Prague, titles.
Just saying something.
Yeah.
Man. Something tells me that Ken is not going to tune into this episode.
Oh God, no. I remember telling you about how I sat down, Orphans of Sickness off of the second Gorguts album, sat down on his like $60,000 stereo or something. And it sounded amazing. I will say it just sounded incredible. And he was just not having it, but he was sweet enough to let me indulge him in that insanity. Sounded pretty plump to me. I was psyched. Anyway, let's move on. Before we do, we should probably talk about episode 112, because we're going to leave you with the final song from Blizzard Beast, Frost Demon Storm. One word, Frost Demon Storm. Yeah, next episode, we're going to cover Hail Spirit Noir. This is a band that it's probably fair to say I'm a bigger fan than you, just in the sense of knowing them. I've listened to them more. I probably own more albums. You know what I mean? Like, I've paid more attention to them.
And you got me into them.
Back in 14? Yeah. Okay, so when their second album, Imagi, came out. But that's... what I want to do, and this is sort of just a fun little thing, is like kind of play some for you, Hunter, just stuff you haven't heard. We've probably never sat down and listened to it together. Not only Imagi stuff, but their third album, Mayhem in Blue from 16, and then Eden in Reverse, which for me is their very best album from 2020.
Now I have Eden. I have Eden in Reverse too.
That's great.
It's amazing.
We'll probably ignore the first album and Mannequins, just because I want to really focus on those three. They just seem to be right in the spirit of what we do. Hail Spirit Noir from Greece on the next episode. So, Frost Demon Storm.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure as always. It's been a mix of pleasure and pain this evening.
We have a weird friendship that way.
We do.
A lot of psychedelia thrown in there.
Psychedelic pleasure, psychedelic pain.
Ooh. Let's listen to this thing. And man, thanks for listening. This has been awesome doing this with you, Hunter. Nice choice. Yeah. It stumped me for like half a second when you first mentioned it as an episode, not as an album, because we love it. But now I'm really happy that you did. So thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for indulging me.
Good night. Sleep well, keeper of the eternal sleeps.